as Mr. Ward has indicated, the two problems that presently confront us are these, substantially. Is there in this country a substantial force toward socialism? And if so, what are the means that can be used to turn it into something that will have effect upon the American scene? Now, at this time, I think that it might be most useful if I could make one or two suggestions to people whom I assume are pretty well committed to the principles of socialism, rather than trying to extol the praises of socialism itself. And I don't want to mince words, curry favor, or try to fawn upon anybody. I want to speak plainly as I see one of the problems that are confronting us. So far as the first of the two questions is concerned, there is some evidence that you may employ from a recent plaint by the Un-American Activities Committee. Suspect as that may be, it is still significant that a few days ago it came out with a public announcement that there are over 1 million people in the United States who, as they say, work for communism and the communist movement. Now, this is some confirmation of the experience of anybody who is engaged in left-wing activity in this country, that there is a large segment of people in the United States already committed to its principles. And you have probably discovered also that there is at least a somewhat larger segment that will now give a tolerant ear to the arguments in favor of public ownership. An increasing number of people who are skeptical of the validity of the existing economic system and are becoming increasingly cynical of the political financial machine which controls it. It does not require any argument to convince objective-minded people that the United States is now in a serious, though far from final, decline. In whatever direction we turn, whether it is political, financial, economic, morally, or even physically, the evidences of this decline are manifest. A new order is sweeping the world, and its superiority to the old one is attested whether you consider its scientific achievements, its military successes, the rising standards of living of its people, its cultural advancement, or even its athletic prowess. And the condition is a continuing and declining one. We are now in an age of space travel and jet propulsion, trying to advance with the Conestoga wagon of ancient political and economic forms. If the United States of America is going to keep abreast of the world, if it is going to retain the prestige that was once it, then there are three things that it must attain. First, we must have a planned socialist economy. Second, we must get rid of war and militarism. And third, we must ensure political, economic, and social equality to every person, regardless of race, color, or any other artificial barrier. Will either of the old parties bind itself or alter its commitment so as to introduce a program of this kind? Merely asking the question answers it. Of course, they will not. Arnold Toynbee, the historian, has developed the theory that peoples and nations advance and decline in accordance with the response that they make to their environment. as the environment changes and as changes are imposed from the outside, then it becomes expedient that any people that is going to retain its position or advance must change itself so as to adjust itself to these new situations. For example, when Hernando Cortes landed with 600 Spanish troops in Mexico, he found there an empire of 10 million people, a high degree of civilization, a brave and warlike people. They could not, however, get away from their superstitions, their ancient intertribal hatreds and animosities of the Spaniard. In Asia, Africa, North America, great empires collapsed from the same defect. The one thing that we will have to do in order to bring the American people to an alteration of these structures that will lead this nation to higher standards, lead it to the advancement that is possible to it, is to educate them in the truths, the achievements, and the possibilities of socialism. We have to tell them what socialism has done, and we have to point out its promises and its possibilities. There are organizations that are professedly, at least, devoted to that purpose. There are small political parties in the United States who profess this to be their ambition. I must say that their history is not encouraging. They are small. They do distribute books. They print magazines. They edit papers. They have forums for discussion, and they engage in small political activity. There are certain accomplishments and achievements of the existing socialist world that, while not as spectacular, are more important than the conquest of outer space. Let me mention a few briefly and ask yourselves what you know or what you have heard about them, or whether you are prepared to point them out to others who might give you an ear. In the Soviet Union, for instance, we have the astounding situation that in its relatively short and difficult existence, it now outproduces all of Western Europe, including England, although the populations of those countries exceed its by 60 million people, and they have all had an advanced technology, while the Soviet Union's instruments were practically destroyed in the last World War. We hear all kinds of stories about the drab and unrewarded existence of the Soviet worker. To me, at least, it was amazing to learn that in that country, an iron worker gets a wage equivalent to $750 a month, American money, and a truck driver $500 a month. That all medical services are free, that the charge which is made for their rents and utilities are practically negligible. Now, do I get this out of one of the socialist magazines or out of the papers edited by any of the socialist parties? No. This was stated out in full in a series of articles that ran just a few weeks ago in the New York Times. Poland was not even a country until after the end of World War I. It was almost wiped out in World War II. Today, it is fifth in production in Europe, being surpassed only by the Soviet Union, England, West Germany, and France. With 26 million people and its industry almost completely destroyed in the World War, Poland has now passed Italy with 47 million people. How did it do it? West East Germany has 18 million people. It is now directly after Italy with its 47 million in production. A few days ago in the Reichstag, a West German official stood up and said that East Germany has already passed West Germany scientifically and technologically, and pointed out to the advance of industry in East Germany. Where do we find these facts? Again, in a socialist magazine or newspaper? No. They are also contained in the New York Times. Years ago, the Soviet Union constructed a waterway by which ocean-going vessels can now come from the Arctic Ocean down through the length and breadth of Russia, emerge into the Caspian and the Black Sea. An article on this pointed out that the thing was of such magnitude that our own Tennessee Valley Authority alongside of it was only a kindergarten exercise. Where do we find it? You have to dig out Stewart's Chase's indictment of the wastage of American natural resources called Rich Land, Poor Land, which was published back in 1936. In the south of Russia, they have had some reclamations of desert and waste places that have been described as baffling the imagination. Whose imagination was baffled? The authors of the English conservative scientific magazine, Nature. In this country, there is one doctor to every 750 persons. In the Soviet Union, one to every 350 persons. They are engaged now in an inspiring campaign, nationwide, universal, to wipe out heart disease, cancer, and high blood pressure. It's the only country in the world which has reduced the mortality rate of cancer. The doctors of the Soviet Union assert that the natural and proper span of human life is 110 years, and they propose to introduce that as the span of life of the Soviet people. Do we find this in the socialist magazines and newspapers? We find it, my friends, in a publication put out by two investigators in Canada in a book published last year in Canada and just leaked into this country in small quantities. We don't find it in the documents where we think we should find it. Now, is this to say that our socialist parties and the magazines, the newspapers that they put out, ignore circumstances and facts in the Soviet Union? By no means. You can learn from them, for instance, that Khrushchev is a rascal, and you can learn that all of the socialist countries are governed by tyrannical bureaus and bureaucrats. And you ripple the pages back to be sure you're not reading a release from the State Department, and you hide them away so that the people you're trying to recruit to socialism aren't frightened off by them, because 90% of them seem to be designed for that express purpose. That's the difficulty with the program that we are trying to put across. These papers, many of them, are still waving the bloody Hungarian shirt a year after the Hearst newspapers have relinquished it. And what's the concern? And what is the difficulty? And what is dividing American socialists? Why, they're arguing and fighting to vindicate the memory of dead Russian statesmen. And this is a bootless task, because history will take its giants and put them into their proper perspective and not concern itself with our choice or our predilections. So far as the wrongs, the sins, the omissions and errors of this country are concerned, of the socialist countries, we should at least accord to them Guizot's description of all things that concern human activities. There is, he says, in all human activity, whether we consider the individual or penetrate down into his social compositions,
an admixture of good and evil so profound that we find it always combating without destroying each other. Humanity, he says, never takes the full extent of either good or evil. It erects itself when it seems likeliest to fall, but it falters when its march seems firmest. There is a story by Ariosto of a beautiful and benignant spirit who was condemned by some mysterious circumstance of her nature to spend a portion of her existence in the guise of a hateful and venomous serpent. Those who strove to injure her while she was in this degraded condition were forever foreclosed from the benefits which she afterwards conferred. But to those who then sought to protect her, she afterwards revealed herself in the lovely and ethereal guise that was natural to them. She followed them through their lives, showered them with blessings, made them prosperous in war and successful in love. Such a spirit is that of human equality. At times it assumes hateful and venomous forms. It writhes, it hisses, it stings. But woe to him who then seeks to destroy or injure it, and fortunate he who, recognizing its intrinsic goodness, aids and protects it and deserves to share its blessings in the hour of its glory and triumph. People who have been uncommitted in these controversies between factions in the left wing of the United States movement have little concern with them. We have seen the magnificent achievements of the Soviet Union, achievements so grand and glorious. We have seen the impetus to human equality and to human freedom given such a thrust by that nation that we feel that instead of discovering and enlarging their faults, we should seek to cover them over with our costliest robes and strive instead to discover their benefits and their virtues, and to announce them to the world. This is what we have to do in this country. Political parties, in the same sense that Toynbee says occurs to nations and to people, decline and fall depending upon the response that they can give to their environment. The political parties, the existing parties in the United States, if they're to accomplish any good, if they are to help unite the large segments of the American people who can be led over to socialism, have to cut themselves off from the past. They have to forget, and I do not mean to conceal, but they have to forget the hatreds and animosities that separated them from people whose main idea was the same as theirs. They have to stop assaulting the Soviet Union. And they cannot excuse themselves by saying, we love the Soviet people, but we despise their government. Because when they say that, they put themselves in the respectable company of John Foster Dulles, for that's his exact principle. And if these parties cannot adjust themselves, if they feel that just a small step forward is an advance, if they feel that they cannot cut themselves off from the difficulties of the past and leap out into the future and carry the American people with them, then it is incumbent upon the American people to found other parties. If they cannot provide the vehicle, new vehicles must be constructed for it, especially with the young people. They cannot be invited to become sectarian. They cannot be invited to hate other radical and other socialist groups. They cannot be invited to share the animosities of their fathers and their grandfathers. The task that lies to the socialist groups in this country is to say to the young people, in the words of Mazzini, slumber not in the tents of your fathers. The world is advancing, advance with it. Thank you. Thank you.
As you can see, Vincent Hallinan is a man who believes in plain speaking and dealing straight from the shoulder at all times. And from this, American socialism, regardless of its tendencies, can only benefit. If we're honest with each other and exchange our views openly and fully, that's the beginning of a real new platform and a new spirit for the American socialist movement. And we appreciate it.